From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Tom Horn is his name, Stargates, multidimensional beings, a pure Coast to Coast program. A story that I have followed for nearly 10 years. Can you believe it's been that long, almost? Well, they have a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder case. A schoolteacher, 41 years old, has been questioned and arrested in Thailand. The suspect arrested for the December 26, 1996 murder of JonBenet Ramsey. A law enforcement source identified the suspect as 41-year-old John Mark Carr, a one-time schoolteacher and American citizen who has lived in Conyers, Georgia. Carr has confessed to some elements of the crime, according to some law enforcement sources. The sources added that Carr had been communicating with someone in Boulder, Colorado, and that online investigation played a key role in leading authorities to the suspect. It is the first arrest in the decade-long investigation of the six-year-old beauty queen pageant. She was slain, of course, in that very tragic, tragic day after Christmas. It is a breakthrough, came as a surprise to many who feared the case, including me, might never be solved. Carr was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand, following several months of focused and a complex investigation. JonBenet's parents, John and Patsy Ramsey, were consulted during the investigation. Lacey said that the family and the Ramsey family was notified of the arrest. Patsy family, by the way, died in June of ovarian cancer at the age of 49. Two law enforcement sources say that Carr also is under investigation for an unrelated sex crime. An investigator with the Boulder County District Attorney's Office is bringing Carr to Colorado from Thailand. JonBenet's beaten and strangled body was found in the basement of the home in Boulder the day after Christmas in 1996. In a moment, I will be checking in with Charlie Bosworth. He is an expert in this case. He wrote a book with the noted pathologist Cyril Reck that is called Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey? We'll be talking with Charlie about this case in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. A woman passenger has been arrested after a flight from London to Washington was diverted to Boston because of an onboard disturbance. Transport officials said the 59-year-old woman was held in connection with a confrontation with a flight crew. She was carrying hand cream, a banned item, and matches on board the United Airlines flight. The aircraft was escorted into Logan Airport by two fighter jets. Responding to reports that the woman had been tied up during the flight, a United Airlines spokesperson that said that she had been restrained. Reports that the woman was carrying a screwdriver and a note referring to Al-Qaeda have been denied. Security officials at Boston's Logan International Airport laid all of the luggage from the plane out on the runway and checked every item with sniffer dogs. The Lebanese cabinet has approved a plan to deploy the Lebanese army south of the Litani River starting on Thursday, but the cabinet apparently skirted the issue of disarming Hezbollah, which is a key requirement of the ceasefire that has ended fighting between Israel and the guerrillas. So we'll know more in the next day or so there. A Mexican drug lord, Javier Arellano Felix, has been apprehended after Drug Enforcement Administration officials were tipped off that the kingpin was aboard a boat in international waters near the U.S.-Mexican border. Federal drug agents and the Coast Guard arrested him on a private vessel in the Sea of Cortez. He is the leader of a violent gang responsible for digging elaborate tunnels to smuggle drugs under the U.S. border. In Athens, Georgia, a college student accused of hitting two McDonald's customers with her car after a dispute over who was next in line was ordered held on $3,000 bond for each of two counts of aggravated assault. She's 24 years old, a student at the University of Georgia. The dispute started when Melinda Ann Thomas, a 34-year-old, and her mother, Linda Ann Thomas, a 51-year-old, stepped to the front of a crowded restaurant line. When they later left, a driver in the parking lot struck both of them with the side of her Jeep. Neither woman was badly injured. The restaurant incident came within 3 months of a fatal attack at a McDonald's in Covington, about 30 miles southwest of Athens. On May 23rd, a man ran over two women and their three children, killing a two-year-old. Lanny Perry Barnes is facing murder and aggravated assault charges for that case. A story we've been following here on Coast to Coast. A 16-year-old cancer patient's legal fight has ended in victory when his family's attorneys and social services officials in Virginia have reached an agreement that would allow him to forego chemotherapy. He didn't want it, but judges kept saying, "You will get it." Under the decree, star child Abraham Cherix, who is battling Hodgkin's disease, will be treated by an oncologist of his choice who is board certified in radiation therapy and interested in alternative treatments. The family must provide the court updates on Abraham's treatment and condition every 3 months until he's cured or turns 18. Here we go again. High-tech hackers have started to produce malicious programs that target the latest bugs in Microsoft's Windows. A worm has been spotted in the wild that tries to use vulnerabilities to hijack home computers. Could be hours. Any computer compromised by the worm will become part of a large botnet set up to send out junk mail. At the same time, Microsoft is reissuing a recent security patch, which has made the Internet Explorer browser crash on some computers. Well, on the feature story on coasttocoastam.com, take a look at this story. By the way, there is kind of a grisly picture there. I just want to warn you there. But residents in Maine are wondering if an animal found dead over the weekend may be the mysterious creature that has mauled dogs, frightened residents, and been the subject of local legend for half a generation. The animal was found near power lines along Route 4 on Saturday, apparently struck by a car while chasing a cat. The carcass was photographed, there's a picture on the coasttocoastam.com website, and inspected by several people who live in the area, but nobody is sure exactly what it is. Michelle O'Donnell of Turner, Maine, spotted the animal near her yard about a week ago before it was killed. She called it a hybrid, mutant of some kind. For the past 15 years, residents in a county there have reported seeing and hearing a mysterious animal with chilling, monstrous cries and eyes that glow in the night. Now, what you're going to hear is sound that was picked up from Ohio. I believe it's similar. I believe it could be the same creature. Listen. Very close to the chilling, monstrous cries that they have heard up there in Maine. But the complete story up there on coasttocoastam.com. The crew, by the way, in the James Bond film Casino Royale, hey, they've refused to get on a stunt jumbo jet because they say it's haunted. The workers fear that the 747 is protected by the spirit of a passenger who died from a heart attack on board. The crew say that the lights and warning systems have come on during filming, even though the jet has no power. The crew also claims to have seen the woman's ghost gliding up and down the aisles of the 30-year-old plane. And as you know, we've been checking this incredible story after a caller called us several days ago talking about a generator that runs merely on water. And he said that he believes that Home Depot will start selling this incredible device soon. We're still working on the story. But Tommy, our producer, our line producer at night, checked with Home Depot, and they really don't have much information about it, or they're not telling him. He went through several sources, and he says he's now waiting to hear from the scientist who supposedly invented this generator. If we get that information, we'll pass it on to you. It is indeed an incredible story. Now, in a moment, Charlie Bosworth, we're going to be talking about this incredible story, a possible suspect now, a true suspect in the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. Charlie Bosworth is a former St. Louis newspaper reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He has been following the JonBenet Ramsey case since almost day one. He wrote a book called Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey with noted pathologist Cyril Wecht, which examines the details of this entire case. Charlie and I have been following this case now for nearly 10 years. Charlie, did you ever think that they would finally get a suspect in this case?
George, as we talked about so many times, I absolutely did not. And somebody asked me what my first reaction was today, and I said I was just flabbergasted. I was really stunned that the case had taken this turn. It really is an amazing event.
Can you tell us, Charlie, what you know about this particular suspect, how they possibly found this person?
Well, so far the reports are suggesting that he's been corresponding online or via email with someone in the Boulder area, and that whoever he's been talking to went to authorities. Now, whether or not that's the only thing that led police to him, we don't know. There's also the possibility there are reports, and of course everything's still pretty fluid right now, but there are reports that there has been a DNA match. As you know, there was an unidentified DNA sample found in JonBenet's underwear. It was a male. The sample was from a male, but they could not identify the sample from any of the more than 100 people from whom they took DNA samples. And there was also some DNA matter found under JonBenet's fingernails that also was unidentified. We knew that all of that had been entered in the national DNA data bank. And there was always the possibility that some new sample from a suspect in some case would be entered. And when they do that, there's always a check with all of the unsolved cases, the unidentified samples. And there's a possibility that that there was a match made that way that led police to this suspect. But at this point, we're not really sure, and we're really looking forward to the news conference with the Boulder District Attorney's Office this afternoon to kind of fill us in on where all of that is.
Incredible story, Charlie. And as you know, 10 years ago when I was doing my local show on KTRS, and you, of course, the very fine reporter then at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, we talked about the various possibilities, the possible suspects. The brother's name came up. John Ramsey, the father's name came up. It was just an amazing story. And now to see this make this turn, this incredible turn of events 10 years later, is got to be emotional for John Ramsey, especially now that Patsy has died. This may have been a moment she needed in her life.
Fortunately, from everything we've seen and heard today, that Patsy was very much aware of this suspect and of an imminent arrest before she died. John and the family's attorney, Lynn Wood, have confirmed that the authorities had talked to John and Patsy and filled them in on where the case stood, and that they had this suspect, and that they were optimistic that there would be arrest very soon. So it sounds like Patsy at least had that much peace before she died in June, and knew that the case was headed toward an arrest. So at least she had that much information.
Charlie, aside from the direction that your research and Cyril Rex's research has taken in your book, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey, the method and the motive that you two wrote about back 10 years ago, do you believe that's still the case? That may hold up in this particular case?
Well, there's some facts that we based our conclusions on and our speculation on that are still irrefutable, George. The as you and I have talked about so many times, there is irrefutable medical evidence that JonBenet had been sexually abused over some period of time. This was not a one-time event on Christmas night of 1996. She had been sexually abused prior to that, too. The autopsy report clearly establishes that based on the physical evidence found in the examination of JonBenet's body. And, of course, Cyril is a forensic pathologist of international renown, as well as he was at that time when we wrote the book. He was the coroner in Pittsburgh and also a lawyer. So he has a great experience to draw on. But we dissected the the autopsy report in minute detail, literally letter for letter through the report, with Cyril interpreting it from his expertise. And there was evidence that was confirmed during the investigation and during the autopsy that there was evidence of chronic sexual abuse. Now, Cyril explained to me that chronic to a pathologist means at least 72 hours old. So there was evidence that she had been sexually abused at least 72 hours before her death, and Cyril's conclusion was a pretty extensive period of time before that, based on the physical findings during the autopsy. So that raises a question, you know, if this suspect killed her that night and sexually abused her, what accounts for the sexual abuse that the autopsy disclosed in the days and perhaps weeks before that? Was this an ongoing sexual abuse involving this man? Were there other people involved? It just raises so many questions that it'll be really fascinating to see how it comes out as the evidence begins to be made public.
I think so. And at this point, we don't know if this suspect, John Mark Carr, knew the Ramsey family, do we?
Not really, no. There is a report, I think, by Reuters that says that the Ramseys had mentioned his name previously to authorities. From what we don't know, unless it was someone, you know, it could have been this person he was corresponding with, had told the Ramseys. It doesn't say exactly how. We know that the Ramseys gave a lengthy list of names to authorities of people they said might have access or would know the family well enough to have committed this crime. There is a report that the Ramseys were aware of him. And, of course, we know that there were probably well into triple digits of suspects who've been interviewed and investigated by the police since this happened almost 10 years ago. And he's been identified as having been on that list for some time. But at this point, we just don't know exactly how he got there or what it was or whether the Ramseys, you know, whether they had some familiarity with him back when they all lived in Georgia or not. You know, the Ramseys lived in the Atlanta area until 91, when JonBenet was basically an infant, having been born in 90, and they moved to Boulder then for John's when John started his software company. If this John Mark Carr was identified as having lived in Conyers, Georgia, another Atlanta suburb, back some time ago, but we don't really know the timing, and we don't know whether he was somehow acquainted with the family back then or really whether they knew each other beyond this report that he might be involved in, you know, as a suspect in the case.
Well, we will probably find that out this morning when they hold their news conference. He would have been the suspect, 31 years old, at the time that she was murdered. Do you remember when we used to hear that story about a Santa Claus, somebody dressed up like Santa Claus might have been involved, might have been a suspect?
Yes, right. That was a family friend who was...
Could that have been him?
Pardon?
Could that have been this suspect?
No. The family friend was identified and of course, interviewed at great length and pretty much cleared because he was the subject of a lot of speculation. He was interviewed a lot. He was even interviewed by the media and talked about, you know, what a close relationship he had with the Ramseys and with JonBenet in particular. And, of course, that actually, some of his comments to the media gave rise to more suspicion about him. He was a specific friend of the Ramseys in Boulder. who at Christmas every year would dress as Santa Claus and you know, visit the friends' houses and play Santa Claus for the kids, that kind of thing.
Well, I got to tell you, Charlie, if this suspect is indeed going to get charged, the fact that he lived in Georgia and then made his way to Boulder, Colorado, is an incredible story. Are you going to stick around for some phone calls, Charlie?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll do that. We're going to open up the phone lines with Charlie Bosworth. Those of you who are interested in this incredible case, the phone number's west of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, our special guest tonight will be Tom Horn as we talk about multidimensional beings, including stargates. I'm looking forward to that. But first, we're going to continue with phone calls now with our special guest, Charlie Bosworth, co-author of the book, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey, as we are following the story, the incredible story, that a 41-year-old one-time school teacher has been questioned, arrested in Thailand in the murder case, the 1996 murder case of JonBenet Ramsey. We'll be back in a moment with Charlie Bosworth and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Charlie, I heard an earlier report today that this 41-year-old suspect was with his family in Georgia at Christmas time, and they claim they have pictures of this to prove this. We'll find out, I guess, what will happen.
Yes, that's a fascinating part of what we have to look forward to is the at least some information and perhaps answers to so many of the questions that that his arrest bring up. There, you know, the evidence raises so many different points that will either be answered or you know, there'll be that much more investigation to try to answer them related to this arrest.
How dumb could he be to be talking with somebody on the internet and obviously saying some things to allow this other person to go to authorities?
I know that's one of the incredible things, and of course the my friends in the police and prosecution always remark that a lot of times cases are solved not because the police are so smart, but because criminals are so stupid. They repeatedly make the same kinds of mistakes that you see breaking cases all of the time. And part of the problem is if you've committed some crime, especially something of this magnitude, and so many years have gone by, that there's an almost irresistible urge to talk about it with someone else to try to share that, and even if you just maybe do it in a third person, you know, to try to give yourself some credit for it, and we see many times that that's what breaks an old case, that somebody's finally just unable to resist that temptation to talk about the case and to explain why they know more than other people do about it and that kind of thing, and it almost gets down to a point of bragging because they've gotten away with it and they need to share that.
Charlie, one more question before we go to these many phone calls, and they're all stacked up waiting for you. The stories today talked about the fact that this suspect knew information that only law enforcement did. Now, you've investigated this case for 10 years, you along with Cyril. What kinds of information would he know, assuming he is truly the perpetrator here? But, I mean, what kinds of things would he know that we already don't know, people like you haven't already talked about on programs like this?
Well, there are several things that we don't know, and that he could shed light on if indeed he committed this crime. What was the weapon that was used to inflict that severe crushing skull fracture to JonBenet?
Okay.
You know, the shape of the the fracture suggests it was something perhaps like a very heavy flashlight. because, you know, that skull fracture pretty much went from the back of her head all the way across the top and almost down to the eyebrow in the front. So we know that that was a tremendous blow. It was described to me as hard enough to drop a 300-pound lineman, football lineman, let alone a six-year-old girl. And then there's also the question of the cord that was found around her neck and around her wrist. There was no cord, other cord like that in the house. So where did that come from? What happened to the rest of it? The duct tape that was found across her mouth, there was no other duct tape in the house. So where did that come from? And, you know, how would he have gotten into the house and when? You know, so there are a lot of elements here that no one has ever been able to disclose. And if he can do that in a way that satisfies the police, you know, they may well have be able to lock that lock that into the case, and that may convict him beyond a doubt.
To the phones we go. First time caller line. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you. I have two questions. I'm a mother of four, two girls and two boys, so I find this very heart-wrenching and compelling. In regard to the sexual assault, have they determined that sexual assault was a part of the murder, or was it just something that had occurred over time, and did they ever clear the brother? Secondly, is there any indication that the man they've arrested was somehow in cohorts with the mother? I knew at one time they were saying that, you know, maybe she was kind of involved with it and not the father. And I was just curious if you knew any information in regards to those questions.
Regarding the first question, we don't really know the answer to either one, but we don't know whether the sexual abuse, how that's going to be linked to the evidence against this man. We know the autopsy clearly establishes that she had been sexually molested moments before she died, and that's a medical conclusion based on the condition of her body and the body's reaction to the injuries that she suffered. So she clearly was sexually abused in the time just preceding her death. There is also evidence that establishes sexual abuse described in the autopsy report as chronic, which means to a forensic pathologist, which means that it was at least 72 hours old. So we know that 72 hours before she died, at least that long, she had also been sexually abused. And Cyril's conclusion based on the autopsy report and the evidence that it offered was that she had been sexually abused over a fairly substantial amount of time.
Gosh, and the brother's been cleared also.
He has been. In fact, he was the very first person cleared officially. Then district attorney Alex Hunter, because of some of this, especially the tabloid speculation about her brother Burke, who was only 9 at the time that this happened, the district attorney came out and made a special point of saying that Burke was not a suspect in any way, that he had been cleared completely, and Mr. Hunter did make a very special effort to clear Burke of any suspicion.
It's possible that this suspect might implicate some other people as well.
It could be. And that's one of the questions. Is this purely a situation where he was involved by himself? And was he, did he have the exposure to JonBenet over a period of time to have inflicted the kind of sexual abuse that the autopsy report suggests or pretty well establishes had occurred? That's one of the fascinating points of the evidence that I think really has to be answered, because there's clearly this history of at least sexual abuse over a period of days, if not longer.
All right, next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Yes, sure is.
Yes, good evening. I enjoy you so much.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Bosworth, two questions. how the suspect could have obtained entry into this big, big house. And then what you were saying before about these supplies, these things found on her body, the pencil, the cord, the duct tape. He's a teacher. Could he possibly have been one of her teachers?
There's no evidence at all that he was one of her teachers. There was no connection, and I saw a report earlier tonight that specifically there was an attempt made to determine whether or not he had ever lived in or even visited the Boulder area, and there's no evidence that he lived there at all. And of course, she was only 6 years old, so she had very limited time in school. And if he were one of what would be a very small number of teachers she had, they certainly would be able to prove that immediately. So there's no evidence that he was ever living in the Boulder, Denver, Colorado area. The first question, there was a point at a basement window where access could fairly easily could have been gained into the house. And I have stood and looked right through that basement window. It's one of those recessed window wells that's at ground level, and then the window goes down below ground level. And there's a grate at the top of the window well. But that metal grate, you can easily pick that up. And one of the window panes into the basement had been broken, and John Ramsey told police that he had done that himself, actually, when he locked himself out of the house one day. There was a suitcase found against that wall in the basement under that window. There were some marks on the wall below the window that there was speculation that, somebody dragging their foot up and down the wall, either coming in or going out of of that window. So there was that way that someone could have gotten into the house. I'm sorry, go ahead.
In such a big, big house.
It's a very unusual house.
I've seen it when it was empty. Mm-hmm. They brought us on a tour of the house, empty. But in a massive house like that, no security when they slept.
Well, see, they had a security system, and it was off that
strange
night.
It strange.
Had not been armed.
Yeah. And what the heck was this guy doing in Thailand, Charlie?
That's an interesting question. Thailand is infamous for kind of an underground sex industry. I was reading one of the reports tonight says that this was his third trip to Thailand, and that he was there on a working visa from the United States.
That's
and
strange.
Had been making efforts to find a job teaching English. He was living there. In fact, when he was arrested, they arrested him at an apartment where he is living. So it's not that he was, there on a temporary holiday and, was just staying at a hotel or something. He actually had an apartment where he was living.
I wonder how long he's been out there, too.
Don't know, but they said this was his third trip. So he's been there and then back. He has been there for a while because one of the reports said that the police in Thailand had been watching him for about 3 weeks. Based on the reports from the United States that he was under suspicion. So, he's been there for some period of time. He's not just been there for a couple of days. He's been there at least, approaching a month, if not longer.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Biloxi, Mississippi.
Okay, sir. Go ahead, please.
I used to live in a little town 90 miles south of St. Louis called Frederickstown, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1989, there was a huge kidnapping case of a little girl by the name of Gina Dawn Brooks. Now, this case has really disturbed me because I saw the little girl within 3 minutes of her kidnapping. What I would like to ask, particularly your guest, is if he is familiar with the case and if anything has happened in the last several years with this case.
Certainly, that name is pretty well known to everyone in the St. Louis area. And off the top of my head, I don't remember any new developments in that case anytime recently. I'll try to check on that and see what I can find out, and maybe George can report back. But I don't think there's been anything new in that case. But that, again, that's another one of those amazing cases that has gone unsolved for many, many years.
That was a very strange case, Charlie. As you know, happened in 1998. She was riding her bike to a friend's house late at night. She simply disappeared. They found her bike 5 blocks from her house. 2 little 12-year-old boys heard her scream. They saw a battered station wagon drive off. 9 years have passed, and to my understanding, really nothing's happened. Investigators keep searching. They may have charged a couple guys with that abduction. Now, there's 1989, by the way, it happened, but they did some updates. But I don't know what happened with that. I don't think they ever found her, and I think the case is unsolved.
That's my memory as well, George, and we'll have to confirm that and
yeah,
report
back. It's been
back.
A long, long time, but I'm pretty right. sure that's still an open case. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I have a couple of questions. Basically, why doesn't the Boulder Police have criminologists?
Why doesn't the Boulder Police have criminologists? Well, they do.
No, they don't.
They don't have criminologists? Well, how about the county? What about the state?
No. Well, I applied for criminology along with several other guys back in the 80s. And we told them, you're going to have a major case on your hand at some point in your career, and you're going to wish to God you would have had criminologists on your team.
Charlie, I can't believe the state of Colorado doesn't have that.
Well, the state does, and
weren't they called in on this?
Yeah, they were, but not right at the beginning. That's another one of the errors that the Boulder Police made, was not accepting the offer. The Bureau, I think it's called the Colorado Bureau of Identification, kind of like the state FBI level, immediately offered their assistance and were told that it wasn't needed.
Because the investigating officer that shows up is basically the detective that works the case.
Right.
Pretty much really like it is in L.A.
Right. Now, they did have a forensic team that came out and collected evidence and all of that. And as you've seen video of them taking materials in and out of the house and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they botched the case.
There was a lawsuit, a dismissed lawsuit. Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
In that window because of a spider web. It takes a spider, that particular spider that's around the Colorado area, that builds its web in about 15 minutes.
That's an interesting point. I know that the police looked into that and even brought in experts to look at it and say, the morning after her body was found that there was this spider web in the window well. And they wanted to know whether or not that was the kind of thing that could be done, in the amount of time that it would have been there. I've heard mixed results on that response, whether it was too soon or whether there would have been time for a spider web to be built if someone had moved in and out of the window in the overnight period. But you're right, there was a spider web there that the police did try to investigate in terms of timing of access through that window well.
Well, hopefully sometime this morning, Charlie, we will get some answers to a lot of these questions. And if they've been watching this suspect for several weeks now, well, they may have more than meets the eye here, don't you think?
Absolutely. And George, just think about all of the speculation and all the attention that this case has drawn over the 10 years.
Oh, my God.
This is the kind of case where before, and of course we know that the authorities in Boulder have been extremely careful in their approach to the case, and there's been conflict between the police and the prosecution over who should be charged and all of that. But I'm sure that that Mary Lacy, the district attorney in Boulder, would certainly not jump to conclusions about an arrest at this point in the case. And if they're willing to go to Thailand and bring Mr. Carr back on charges, you can bet that they've got a very substantial body of evidence against him.
Charlie, truly a very mysterious case. Thanks for being on the program, Charlie.
Absolutely, George, anytime.
Charlie Bosworth, Who Killed Jean-Benet Ramsey, is the name of his book. I've known Charlie for about 10 years right now myself. I'll be back in a moment with our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast, Tom Horn, as we talk about multidimensional beings and stargates and some other strange things on Coast to Coast AM.